Good day. It is Friday Eve, like you like to call it, from Lala, Mr. Smith.
What's going on?
In the sunshine.
What's
How are we
on?
Feeling?
How
are you having fun out here?
I'm good.
You're enjoying yourself?
Life is comfortable.
Okay.
You know, life is comfortable. The sunshine, it was about 85 degrees yesterday, and is expected to be similar today. So I'm good.
Okay. Dan, how are you
doing? I'm good.
I'm great. 85 degrees in the middle of October sounds terrible, though. We're at like a nice 58 to 62 here in Connecticut. Feels like fall. We got the leaves changing. It feels like football, but 85 in October, that's not what it's like.
Somebody that's in Connecticut would say that.
Yeah, I love it.
My home state.
Yeah, you know it, Miles. You know it.
I know. No, I do love it.
Are y'all interested in going back?
But my tan is it's real nice.
That's right.
All right, let's keep going. Stephen A., you cannot complain about this Thursday night football matchup, sir. We got the 3-1 Rams facing the 2-2 Seahawks. Matthew Stafford looking to bounce back after the loss to the Chargers. Seattle trying to build on their momentum after taking down the Niners. Now, while the Seahawks have made the postseason in 8 of Russell Wilson's first 9 NFL seasons, they've struggled to get over the hump since losing Super Bowl 49 to New England. In that span, Seattle failed to make it beyond the divisional round, posting a 3-5 record in those games. Dan, talk to me. Has Russell Wilson plateaued in Seattle?
Russell Wilson has plateaued in Seattle, but it's not because of Russell Wilson. Now, Russell Wilson has reached the peak, right? He's reached the pinnacle. He's won a Super Bowl. But Russell Wilson's plateau as a player in the last 3 years is 105 touchdowns and 25 picks. They've gone 11-5, 12-4, 10-6. So, yeah, he has absolutely plateaued. But his plateau is a top-5 quarterback in the NFL, top-6 quarterback in the NFL. Have the Seahawks plateaued Russell Wilson, or has he plateaued because of that organization? Absolutely. I have been on record. I think the Seahawks have absolutely failed Russell Wilson over the last 5 or 6 years. Name me the one impactful. I can name you one impactful player in the last 3 or 4 years out of their draft. DK Metcalf in 2019. We could go two and go Tyler Lockett 2016. Those are the only two, like, impactful guys that the Seattle Seahawks have drafted in the last 5 years for Russell Wilson. There's been some good players here and there, but no one that's impactful like a DK or Tyler Lockett. And so Russell Wilson, you're not going to get much better quarterback play than what he has given you over the last 4 or 5 seasons. It just doesn't exist. And the fact that they've been a really good team, but not great, not NFC Championship, not Super Bowl appearance, great. Yes, he's plateaued there. And I think it's a realistic question. We heard the conversation this offseason that he was unhappy about some stuff. And so if they're going to continue to be a really good team, he's going to throw for another 35-plus touchdowns but not be good enough, he's got to ask himself, have I reached my kind of greatest have I gone as far as I can go with Seattle? And is there a different situation for me in the future? Because the organization has not supported him in the totality of the football team, in the greatness of the football team. They've picked some good receivers, but yeah, Russell Wilson has plateaued in Seattle.
Oh, cry me a river. I mean, you got to be kidding me, man. Listen. When you say what you say, theoretically, from the perspective of his stats and what have you, I get where you're coming from. Right now, he's completing 72% of his passes. He's fresh off a throw of 40 touchdowns to 13 interceptions last year. The 125 and 25 in terms of TD to interception ratio. I get all of that. And they've been to the playoffs the last 3 years. They lost to the Dallas Cowboys. Don't get me started. Yeah. 3 years ago, 2 years ago, it was to Green Bay. Last year, it was to the Los Angeles Rams. I get all of that. But I would remind you, Dan Orlovsky, they go to the Super Bowl and lose the Super Bowl win. This was in 2014. Right. And from that moment forward, they handed the franchise over to Russell Wilson.
Right.
You got to remember, you got beast mode that's balling out, all right? You decide not to give him the ball at the half-yard line after he got you there. You gave the ball to Russell Wilson. He throws the interception to Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl. From that moment on, obviously, the Legion of Boom just dissipated before our very eyes. You hand the franchise to Russell Wilson. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have it, because I'm saying he's big time.
Yeah.
He's big time. But when we ask the question about plateauing, when we ask the question about peaking, you didn't listen. The man went to back-to-back Super Bowls, won a Super Bowl championship. It don't get much better than that. Now he's 32, 33 years of age. It ain't going to get much better than what it once was. But you did go to him and hand him the franchise. Not just the money. You basically said, listen, it's your franchise. We're going to ride with you. Last couple of years, you got DK Metcalf. You got Tyler Lockett. You got Carson in the backfield.
How's the defense?
Excuse me. Yeah, the defense is suspect. The defense, yeah. I understand that. But what I'm saying is we live in the age of a hard cap. You got a guy in Russell Wilson that you want to take care of. I'm saying yes, Molly. The fact is, we could say what we say about Russell Wilson with Seattle, we could say about a lot of other dudes. We've had conversations about Aaron Rodgers. Who's been going off about Aaron Rodgers and the lack of support that he's had for years? I got news for you. Seattle, at times, their defense looked better than Green Bay's. We weren't saying that about Aaron Rodgers. We didn't let him off the hook. So why would we do that for Russell Wilson?
But Russell Wilson has 9 pass TDs, 0 interceptions. So, Stephen A., their team has the worst time of possession in the NFL.
So, talk to
they haven't
Molly.
Even had the ball to do anything.
Talk to them.
Excuse me. They're 2-2. They're 2-2 right now. You are the franchise quarterback. I'm not saying everything is on you, but most of it is going to be. When you make the noise that you made in the offseason, when you sit up there and you look at Pete Carroll and you talk to him about buffering your offensive line, that's what the conversation was. We didn't hear Russell Wilson say anything about that defense. We didn't hear him saying anything about making sure you buffer us on the offensive side of the ball by making sure everything else is taken care of. He wanted to take care of himself. I'm not knocking him because if you're the quarterback and you're behind center Dan Orlovsky, I certainly don't mind, and I have no problem with you saying, excuse me, protect me, damn it, I'm getting beat up here.
Sure.
I get all of that. But all of these other things that we want to bring up, Russell Wilson had an opportunity to bring that up. All he brought up was the offensive line. That's all he said anything about. That's now, it. Am I lying about that?
No. This offseason, that was – but he said he wanted more impact or input when it came to player acquisition. Yes. It was very much so focused on the offensive line. This is where you're wrong because you make the comment, Stephen A., of they gave him the organization once they decided to pay him, as they should have, 100%. Now, when you do that in the NFL, it is incumbent on you as an organization to draft well because you're going to have less capital to make up for some of those missed draft picks. If you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, you know why the Kansas City Chiefs are in such a great situation when after paying Patrick Mahomes? Because they're going to continue to draft well. Do you want to know why the Buffalo Bills will be in a great situation? Because they continue to draft well. Do you want to know why the Baltimore Ravens will be fine once they pay Lamar Jackson? Because their organization will draft well. And that's why Russell Wilson, after this offseason, saying, you know what? I'm not happy with some of the input that I have here, or we're not winning enough games. We're good, but we're not good enough. Because the organization decided, well, Russell, we'll pay you all this money. I'm not going to say decided, but they paid him all that money. But then they have failed to do the number one job. The number one job once you pay your quarterback is you better hit on your draft picks. And they've hit twice in the last 5, Stephen A. That's not going to cut it. And so a quarterback
I'm not saying it would. I'm saying you can't let Russell Wilson off the hook in terms of his culpability and all of that. That's all I'm saying.
But off the hook, Stephen A., he's thrown for 105 touchdowns
in 20.
I'm talking about the organization. I think it's fair to hold it against him that he took the money, so maybe they can't get the people around him, but it's certainly not his play why they're losing. Dan, I want to ask you this. Which quarterback would you rather have, though? Because obviously they're playing the Rams tonight, a great Thursday night football matchup. Would you rather have Russell Wilson, Dan, because you're really making a strong case for Wilson. So
I'm assuming
you're going to go Wilson. Or are you going to go Detroit, Matthew Stafford?
I'm going to go the Nina.
I know he's in L.A. now, everyone.
Yeah, I'm going Nina, Matthew Stafford. Stephen A., Matthew Stafford right now is the best version we've ever seen of him because he finally has a coach that knows what he does well. He's finally got the proper talent around him. He's finally got the team to support him.
What if Wilson was on that team?
11 touchdowns and 2 picks already, 1,200 plus yards. You're going to look at the Arizona game and get all freaked out about it. I'm not going to. He's still an MVP candidate. He's still a top 5 MVP player right now. This dude's going to throw for over 5,000 yards this year and 35 touchdowns easily. This team's going to win.
Not if he keeps targeting Cooper Kupp all the time.
This team's going to win. He's going to win 11 or 12 games. They're going to be right in the thick of the playoffs. If you had to ask me right now who I think is the best team in the NFC, I still think it's the Los Angeles Rams, even though of last week's game versus the Arizona Cardinals. I'll give you the number one reason why, outside of all those, the number one reason why I'll take Matthew out over Russell, and I love Russell, I just told you how great he is, all that. Give me the ball in the fourth quarter. Whether I'm down or tied or I got to make a play to win the game, I'll take number nine over almost everybody in the NFL, and I'll take him over Russell Wilson. No one has more fourth quarter comebacks in the NFL. Actually, Tom Brady does, I believe. Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger, more fourth quarter comebacks since over the last 10 or 12 years in the NFL. Russell Wilson's got eight less than Matthew Stafford. So if this game tonight comes down to the fourth quarter and I got to choose which guy I want, give me nine.
Listen, that's really, really nice. I love how you left out the fact that that's your former teammate and that's your buddy and, you know what, there's an emotional connection there. I love how you just omitted all of that during your soliloquy there. Just left that out about Matthew
Stafford. It's not necessary.
It's necessary, damn it. And here's the reason why. You just made the argument for me when you were talking about Russell Wilson. The manner in which he has played, not just this season, but how consistently excellent he's pretty much been over the course of his career. He's already a Super Bowl champion. He's been to back-to-back Super Bowls. He's been to the playoffs the last 3 years. Okay, he's only missed the playoffs once as a starting quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. And you're giving me a guy, albeit a former teammate of yours, your buddy, who has not won a playoff game in his entire 12-year career. Now, I understand. Believe me, it's the Detroit Lions organization. It's not Matthew Stafford. I know the brother has skills. I get all of that. But damn it, you still got an offer, a donut on your resume. And I'm like, all I'm saying to you is this. Could you at least have the decency to let the man win a playoff game first? Could you do that?
Could we trickle through this season,
get to the postseason, and then say, yo, Matthew Stafford, okay, I believe in you, but you got to at least win a playoff game first before you're going to put him above Russell Wilson. Could you do that?
Okay, Stephen A., in 2014, I was on that team that went down to Dallas in a playoff game. We got hosed by the officials. There's your playoff win. Or in 2016.
Officials?
2016, he went to Seattle against Russell Wilson and had the game won on Calvin Johnson into the end zone, and the officials again made a dog trash call. Those are your two playoff wins. Again, if you gave me one guy tonight with the ball in the fourth quarter and they needed to go score a touchdown to win, I am taking Matthew Stafford.
And what bottom evidence, line. Okay, and I'm saying to you, fair enough, because we are talking about the regular season. What I was going to say to you is that if we're talking about the postseason, what possible evidence do you have to buffer that point?
My eyes.
Zero. Nothing.
My eyeballs.
That's what it is. Okay. He's
so emotional. You're taking
he's
Wilson.
Emotional. He's emotional. I'm saying the resume says so. The resume says so. Dan's giving me emotion. I'm giving you a resume.
I gave you facts.
Which one you taking? No, please. You got. Okay, you got your alternative facts, but I'll leave that alone.
Let this game come down to the fourth quarter, Molly. I'll be on first take
later
on Friday.
Yeah, you do that.
Oh, please come on. I'll be ready for you.
You do that.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Stephen A., let's continue with your top 10 NBA storylines. What is number eight, sir?
Well, number eight is a team that I've been talking about because they've got one of the greatest players in the world at point guard, Luka Doncic. Now, obviously, the Dallas Mavericks are a team that cannot be ignored, obviously, because you have a Luka Doncic. You have a Kristaps Porzingis. When healthy and ready to play, obviously could form a dynamic duo. Nevertheless, since they won the championship in 2011, it's been a decade, and they have not been out of the first round. So who knows what's going to happen with the Dallas Mavericks this season? Who better to talk about it, though, than with their new head coach, the one and only Jason Kidd, new head coach for the Dallas Mavericks right here with yours truly. What's going on, Big Time? How are you, man?
Wonderful. Good morning. Good morning, Stephen A.
Appreciate you being on the show. You took this job with the Dallas Mavericks. Why? What was it that excited you about this job?
Well, I think you brought up a name early, and that's Luka. You talk about one of the best players in this league, only 22 years old. I felt that I could help him. I know that he's going to be considered an MVP candidate. I've been around a couple of MVP candidates, and so my job for Luka is just to make it easy. But, you know, the biggest draw is that we have a young team. Exciting team, a team that set records offensively. And I felt that if I can give some defensive principles, we could be one of those teams that can raise that gold trophy at the end of the season. Why not this year?
When Mark Cuban interviewed you for this job, obviously Dirk Nowitzki and others had a lot to do with you getting the job because Dirk Nowitzki obviously has significant say within that organization at this particular moment in time, as well as he should, considering his greatness and what he's done for the Dallas Mavericks all of those years. Nevertheless, when you took the job, what did Mark Cuban tell you he needed from you and he needed from this team specifically?
Well, Mark, his first thing was be yourself. You know, we all understand that you have a high basketball IQ. You understand what it takes to win, and you understand what it takes, what it means to work. And so he's been great. I played for Mark, won a championship. And so I understand that he's competitive. He wants to win. And so, but he also understands that we all have to work and do our part. And so that was the first conversation that we have had in understanding that it's really simple. Be in the gym, make guys better, and have fun doing it.
Bottom line is you're the new head coach. You got a new president of basketball operations in Nico Harrison, who I know very, very well and expect to do a tremendous job. Now that you've replaced Rick Carlisle, he's obviously replaced Don Nelson. When you took this job, you've obviously heard a lot of noise about Luka Doncic and the relationship that he has with Kristaps Porzingis. What can you tell us about what you heard, and what could you tell us about where you believe that relationship is now and is heading?
Well, I think we all heard in the NBA circle that there was, you know, tension between the two. But I would have to say that's fake news. I think they both want to compete. I think they really want to compete. There were some other issues that I thought they did a great job of keeping in-house. It had nothing to do with those two. And so I'm excited. I think the relationship between the two of them is at a high level. They're basketball players who want to compete and who, you know, they want to win. And for a coach, I have to put them in that position to be successful. But I think their relationship is great.
Other issues like what? Because when we look at these two guys, we know that Doncic is a star. We know that he's a stud. And we had a lot of expectations for Porzingis, primarily due to the health, obviously, that interfered with a lot of it. But what else about Kristaps Porzingis is missing or was missing that is going to be alleviated now?
Well, I think just being a basketball player. I think in the past system, he was, you know, limited to doing a couple of things. I want KP to be a basketball player. When you saw him in New York, he was a basketball player. He wasn't limited to just shooting threes. I really believe that we can play through him in the post, play through him in the mid-range, and play basketball. Those points count. And I think he has a skill set at 7'3 to be able to deliver that. And so I'm excited to be able to see him be himself and not be limited to just shooting threes.
Now, Coach, you've had a lot of experiences yourself. You were in Brooklyn, you were in Milwaukee. Things didn't work out there. But I was very happy that you got this job. I felt you deserved it. I felt you paid your dues. And obviously, you're one of the great basketball minds that exist in this game. Where do you feel you are and where your growth spurt has taken place in order for you to warrant this position as being the new head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. What's different about you now compared to what you were when you were in Brooklyn and Milwaukee as a head coach?
Well, I think the biggest difference is, you know, I went from straight from playing to becoming a head coach and responsible for 15 players. I think two or three of those players are going to be Hall of Famers in Brooklyn. And so just understanding what it meant, the responsibility of 15 guys. As a player, as a point guard, you're responsible for four guys on the floor and yourself. And there's a big difference between that. And so going through that, I was very fortunate to have those older players in Brooklyn. And then when I got to Milwaukee, they were on the heels of just winning 14 games. I thought I brought what it meant and how hard it is to win in this league, and shared that they had to work hard, and we built a great foundation in Milwaukee. People always say that it didn't work out well. I think it worked out great because I taught those young guys what it meant to be a pro, what it meant to work, and Giannis turned out to be an MVP. Chris turned out to be an all-star. And so I look at it differently in a positive way, and now I can share that experience here in Dallas.
Now, the expectation, Coach, for people, you know, looking at the basketball, particularly in the Western Conference, Lakers are the team to beat because they got a whole bunch of experienced dudes led by the great LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook, don't hurt. You got Melo there. You're looking at the Clippers, and Kawhi Leonard is expected back early. You hear about Denver once Jamal Murray gets back. You hear about Utah because of Donovan Mitchell. You hear about the Phoenix Suns because they're the reigning Western Conference champions. You don't hear much about the Dallas Mavericks other than Luka Doncic. That's about it. What's your expectation for the Dallas Mavericks this season?
Well, I think we're in a great seat. I think when you look back at last year, no one really talked about Phoenix. And then they get Chris Paul, and Chris Paul takes them and wins the Western Conference, you know, championship. And understanding that, we feel that we have a talented team. We have a team that's back. Offensively, we know we can put the ball in the basket. Defense is where we've concentrated so far in training camp. And so it's all right to fly under the radar. Understanding there are some very talented teams, and the Lakers are going to be the favorite because of LeBron and the guys that they have in AD. And they got a great coach in Frank Vogel. So, but we feel that we can compete. And you can't play it on paper. You got to play it on the court. And we look forward to that challenge.
Your definition, last question, your definition of success for this team this year is what?
Health.
That's it?
Because, if you're healthy, a lot of good things will happen. Everybody wants to put a number on it. We always talk about the standard in the Western Conference is 50 games to punch that ticket to the playoffs. We all understand. We all have a bad taste in our mouth of what happened last year with the Clippers being up 2-0. So, yeah, we have many goals within in-house, but I think our health. If we're healthy, we could surprise, or we can be who we think can be, and that's competitive and hopefully win a championship.
Coach Kidd, my definition of success for the Dallas Mavericks this upcoming season is getting out of the first round. That's it for
I'll
me.
Take
I don't
that.
Care how many games you win. It's getting out. You'll take that? You'll take that?
I'll take that. I'll take that, man. Because that means we're playing the second round.
All right, my man. The one and only Jason Kidd, new head coach for the Dallas Mavericks. Appreciate you, Coach. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Stephen A.
All right. Molly, back to you.
All right. We'll stay in Dallas. I like that answer, though. Health is wealth. NFC East rivalries are always a beat-up. The New York Giants riding high after a huge win over the Saints, where we saw Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones play really well. The G-men head to Jerry's World to face the Cowboys. Cowboys are one of five teams that are currently favorited by at least a touchdown ahead of their Week 5 matchup. Over the previous 10 seasons, Dallas has won 21 of 23 games when favored by at least 7 points, though they have covered that line in just 10 of those contests. Dan Orlovsky, you're up first here, sir. What team is on upset alert in Week 5?
I think it's the Cowboys. I really do. I look at this Giants team, and I understand they're 1-3. They're 5 plays away from being a 3-1 football team. And we're talking about, this record being swung over 4 or 5 snaps. I'm not the person who says you are who your record says you are. I disagree with that. I think that we're starting to see this offense with the New York Giants really start to understand who they are. Jason Garrett has been significantly better over the last 2 or 3 weeks. Kenny Golladay has started to make some plays. They remembered that Kadarius Toney, their first-round pick out of Florida, actually is on their football team. I want to give credit to Dave Gettleman. A lot of us have been critical of him, me included. He said this offseason the offensive line was going to be a little bit better. I think they are. Daniel Jones is playing really good football. Again, a guy that I've been critical about. Daniel Jones is playing some good football. Saquon Barkley every week has started to look at it a little bit better. And I said Saquon Barkley had pressure on him this year. The thing that I like about the Giants right now, Molly, is 2 or 3 weeks ago, the question was, well, why does this team keep winning or losing these games? And simply put, I said, they got to stop giving them away. They got to stop making the play to lose the game. And somebody is going to have to step up, these young players, and go, no, it's not going to be like this anymore around here. And I'm going to make the play. And this is the play right here. The Daniel Jones, look at Saquon's emotion. He knows how big a deal that was. And you're starting to see a team that says, we're done losing these games. We're done giving these games away. Now, the Cowboys are very good. I think the Giants have to match their physicality defensively. I think they got to keep the ball in front of them. They got to communicate when Dallas changes their tempo offensively. And if Dallas is going to keep playing their man-to-man coverage, Galladay's got to play big. Shep's got to be healthy. Kadarius Toney's going to have to be good. Saquon's going to have to be special. I'm not going to say it's easy, but I think the Giants are better than the nation kind of has the viewpoint of them, and they have the kind of the makeup to go down to Dallas and win that game.
You know what? I like that. I like the fact that Dan picked that, but I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't know if this qualifies as an upset because Buffalo has a better record than Kansas City. But I'm kind of thinking about Buffalo going into KC and knocking off Patrick Mahomes.
I'll take that as an upset.
And the Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah. I think that would be an upset, considering what we witnessed in the postseason where Kansas City handed it to Buffalo. I think Buffalo's better. I think they're more well-balanced. I think that Kansas City doesn't appear to be the juggernaut that it has been thus far. I think we've seen Patrick Mahomes make uncharacteristic mistakes compared to what we've seen in the past, even though he's still a stud, he's still that dude. You know I believe in my brother from another mother, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, Pringle and those boys. But I think their defense is so suspect in Kansas City that the Buffalo Bills are primed to take advantage of that. When you look at the Josh Allen and you know you got Diggs and Emmanuel Sanders is such a great addition to that squad, plus they can run the football. Plus, McDermott can coach. The defense is no joke. And not only that, it's pivotal because suppose you find yourself in a situation where you're going up against them again. I think if you're the Buffalo Bills, your confidence elevates exponentially if that game in the postseason has to come to Buffalo. If you're playing in Buffalo instead of having to go to Kansas City, I think that that is a game that they would be ready for. I think they're aching for that opportunity. And there's no better way to get the advantage for home field than to win a head-to-head matchup in the regular season. Yeah. And that's where I'm at with Buffalo. I'm thinking Buffalo, Kansas City. Again, Kansas City has the worst record than Buffalo. They're 2-2. Buffalo's 3-1. But we all know how we feel about Kansas City, the two-time reigning AFC champions. I think Buffalo qualifies as an upset. I think they may pull it off this weekend.
Yeah, Dan, I know you're really high on Buffalo as a team.
Yeah, I would say that Buffalo's the best team in football right now in all of the NFL because I think they're the most complete team in all of the NFL. Their defense is very, very good. And Josh Allen has really started to make those plays. I would say, Stephen A., because I think it's a good point, and I would say the way if the Bills win this game would be the most concerning thing because if they go and hang 40-plus on this defense, then because we've had this question around the Chiefs of, are you concerned about their defense? And I've kind of held off a little bit because I'm such a believer in Tyrann Mathieu. And, like, if he's on the defense, I feel that they'll be okay. But if they go get 40 hung on them, then it becomes a legit concern. I'll throw another game out there that's got my attention, Molly, that I think has got at least the potential to be a really good game. The Bengals and the Packers. I think that Jair Alexander being out for Green Bay is an enormous deal. If T. Higgins plays for Cincinnati,
we're going to get into that one, too.
Yeah, I think it's there's a chance for it. Yep.
But before we wrap it up really quick, though, Dan, because you know it's my personal agenda and I love, talking football, especially with you. Let's go back to my Giants real quick, because we had talked about this in the past, and you said you thought Daniel Jones could be a good quarterback, solid quarterback, right? But you weren't too high on him, and I was just looking at the stats. Obviously, he threw over 400 yards the last game, and he has the best completion percentage on passes thrown 15-plus yards downfield. Pretty impressive there. Do you think the ceiling is actually higher than you initially thought from what you've been seeing the past couple weeks?
Yeah, I would give him that. I would think that I've always felt that Daniel Jones could be very similar to a Kirk Cousins type of player. That is just going to be a solid guy, 12 to 15 in the quarterback world. And if the good offensive line and good skill and really good play caller, he could enter into a top 10 conversation. Yeah. But I've got to be honest, like I've been very impressed with him over the last 3 weeks. The way that you mentioned him pushing the ball downfield, he's always been really accurate. That's always been his great thing. I remember doing a breakdown of him the morning after he got drafted. This is his superpower, anticipation and accuracy. Mm-hmm. But I think the difference for me that I'm appreciating about him is the aggression. Like he's playing with supreme confidence with the football. And the difference between Daniel Jones in the last 3 weeks in comparison to any moment in his career, he has not once been careless with the football. So, Molly,
yeah,
if he's going to do that, if he's going to continue to play that way and not be careless with the football, then, yes, he's got a higher, I guess, ceiling, we'll phrase it.
Than I thought.
Well, he did throw one interception against New Orleans, but that's neither here nor there. He's completed 68-68 and 70% of his passes over the last 3 weeks. The only thing that I have to say other than that is, what do you mean you love talking football with Dan Orlovsky, Molly? What about me?
This is what I actually meant to say. Because he played the quarterback position. That's why.
I'm just saying. I love talking all things with you, Stephen A. I just think it's another excuse to give try to give Dan and somebody else for more love than me. That's all I'm saying.
Don't be insecure, Molly.
Molly, you would have thought after 20 years on television, he'd have thicker skin than this.
I know.
I'm gonna get you.
Fame, it's an addictive drug. I'll tell you.
All right.
We'll leave it there. Dallas is favored by 7, but he's gonna have to continue to be careful with the football because we know Dallas has been good in takeaways, leading the league in that. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Well, this is becoming a weekly announcement. Stop me if you've heard this before. Matt Nagy names his starter again. And the winner this week of the Bears starting quarterback position is Justin Fields. Here's Nagy.
I think after this past weekend with Justin and the growth that we saw, you know, it really, the discussions that we had was to be able to go this direction. We had our plan with Andy and developing Justin. You know, I think that for me, I knew it came with the territory. And all we wanted to do was do everything we can to do what's best for this team.
But definitely a little bit of a surprise. You know, I'm not just going to be complacent with where I'm at. I'm going to continue to grow, continue to get better, and just try to work hard each and every day to, you know, get wins on Sundays.
Well, Dan, this is starting to feel like Groundhog Day. Here we go, y'all. I'm doing this for the people in Chicago. Yep. Did Matt Nagy make the right decision?
Yes, but he's 3 months too late. And you know, if he makes this decision at the beginning of August and said, okay, we traded up to go get this young man, he's going to be our quarterback. The reality is that Justin Fields has missed out on hundreds of reps. Justin Fields did not take reps with the number ones in training camp. Justin Fields did not get reps with the starters in preseason games. Now, this is going to be his third start, and everyone is going to think, well, this is Justin Fields' third start. No, it's not. This is technically his third preseason game. He's missed out on so much time within his development. And that's been my issue when with everyone kept saying, well, Justin Fields is not ready. I'm aware of that, but would he have been in October? And that's my thing with, as a coach, one of the things you have to do is not necessarily see where your player is, but where your player can get to. And when you cheated Justin Fields out of all these reps, he is now a lesser player going into October 12th weekend than he would have been. And that has been my issue all along, is the inability to have foresight. Now, I think Matt Nagy kind of viewed this situation as the ideal one. When you've got a really good surrounding cast, a good offensive line, a good skill position players in, you know, a defense that can keep you in games. And so you could win games with the bridge quarterback of Andy Dalton, but also develop Justin Fields. That's not the reality of the Chicago Bears situation. Now, we are where we are, okay? We are where we are with Justin Fields is going to be their guy moving forward. I say the number one goal for this organization is to make Justin Fields look like Justin Herbert did last year. We walked away from the Chargers rookie season of Justin Herbert last year going, that dude's a stud. That guy's going to be an MVP candidate moving forward. And that has to be the number one goal for their football team. Number two, they got to win games. They are going to have to win games. Everyone's going to say they got the second toughest schedule left. They don't play a ton of top 10 defenses over the next 5 or 6 weeks. And then they got to figure out if Matt Nagy's going to be the guy moving forward.
All right, Dan Orlovsky, would you stop? Would you stop? First of all, you're wrong. First, let's get that out the way first. You're wrong on a multitude of levels. He's 3 months late or whatever. No, he's not. He's a couple of weeks late. Okay, that's number one. Number two, you yourself have to admit, because you came on the air last week, when he got shellacked, okay, by the Cleveland Browns, because there was somebody who never played football, all right? Just a little reporter from, you know, for all of these years, New York Daily News, Philadelphia Inquirer, and then obviously for CNN, Fox Sports, ESPN.
Get just the whole resume reporter. Out.
That would be right. Me. That
what
would
is
be
a
me.
Wikipedia page?
I was the guy.
Seriously.
I was the guy, Dan Orlovsky, who said, don't put that boy up in there against the Cleveland Browns.
No.
You don't want that Miles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, and those brothers. See, that's the stuff right there. I'm gonna get you, Molly, but it's all right. Here's the deal. I was saying to y'all, he's gonna get slaughtered. What happens? He gets nine sacks against him. Miles Garrett gets about 4. Jadeveon Clowney gets 2.5. Dan Orlovsky comes on the air last week. All right, you got us. You were right. Okay. Yeah. So now we go to the Detroit Lions. What did I say all along? Play Andy Dalton. First 3 games of the season, get that out the way, buy Justin Fields some time, then put him in week 4 against the Detroit Lions. By the way, the 29th ranked defense in the National Football League. What happens? He shows up after looking horrible because he was getting slaughtered because he got no protection whatsoever, not just from with his offense protecting him, but with Matt Nagy's play calling. Okay, he goes up against Detroit. Lo and behold, what happens?
Yeah.
He looks relatively decent.
Wow.
They win 24-14. They're going up against a team with a rookie coach in Campbell. Not really a rookie's coach before, but damn it, he's
doing a good job.
Really? Okay. Whatever. The point is, Dan,
Hold on, Dan.
To y'all, he should start week 4. So to me, Matt Nagy making this announcement is something he could have easily made before the Detroit game. Anytime before that, he had no business doing it. Okay, so to sit up there and say he should have made it 3 months ago. Yeah. Well, damn it, Justin Fields wasn't ready 3 months ago.
Matt Nagy ain't ready at all. Because I'm taking into account
Matt Nagy. And instead of, look, Dan Orlovsky, do you remember what you said about Matt Nagy after the Cleveland Browns game?
Absolutely.
You talked about how it was criminal what he did to Justin Fields, okay? So we're not just looking at Justin Fields' talent. We're looking at Matt Nagy, the coach.
So,
you know, the play call at the time and some of the things that he was doing and wasn't doing. Didn't get him out of the pocket, didn't move him, didn't do anything with him. Left him there as a stationary target to get slaughtered. We brought all of that up. Matt Nagy being the coach has a lot to do with why I said Justin Fields should have to wait, because you don't want to subject him to that. And they did anyway. So okay. If they had done it earlier,
Dan,
it would have been even
the
worse.
Prognosticator is done. He should buy a lottery ticket. You may speak now.
Me, Dan Orlovsky from St. Lawrence Elementary School and Shelton High School, who played Shelton Pop Warner. Listen, Stephen A., I get it, the whole not ready thing. But that is my exact point. No, he was not ready in August. You want him to be ready in October and November. The only way to get ready or as close to being ready as possible in today's NFL with the rules that we have and the schemes that have come into the NFL is to play these young men and let them go. Here's my question to you, Stephen A.
Not always, Dan.
Because here's my question to you, because you don't want him to play against the Cleveland Browns. You watch the Raiders play this year? Is it okay if he plays against the Raiders defensive line this week? Or is it okay that in 3 weeks he plays against that Tampa Bay Buccaneer defensive line with Sue and JPP and Shaq Barrett? Or in 5 weeks when they got to play your Steelers? Is it okay if he plays against them?
No.
It's the big boys. It's the NFL, man.
But you're not representing my argument properly.
You said don't play against the Browns.
I said buy him those first 3 weeks, because once he's in, he's in. Okay, make sure his first start is against Detroit. Buy him those 3 weeks. You foolishly promised Andy Dalton he was going to be your starting quarterback week one when you signed him, because you wanted Russell Wilson in the offseason and wasn't able to acquire him. So you settled for Andy Dalton and you promised him he was going to be your week one starter, foolishly, I might add. But since you did that, okay, go with him those first 3 weeks. Start off week four with Justin Fields going up against the Detroit Lions. He's your starting quarterback, and don't look back. That's what I said. And so to me, that's the issue.
Right,
when you look at him and what he wasn't ready for in August, that's problematic for them, because Matt Nagy is going to cause you some problems.
But Stephen A., here's
3 weeks to buy time.
Here's where I absolutely dunk on your point. You're saying don't play him till after Cleveland because you don't want his first start to be struggle. The Bears played him against Cleveland. It was a disaster. He comes back the next week and looks really good. So obviously, playing against him against Cleveland and it being a disaster had very little to no impact on his ability to play against Detroit. So the whole theory of not playing him against the Browns because you didn't want to have some negative process for him or him to have his first start and it to go really poorly actually had no bearing on his performance against the Detroit Lions.
Well, first of all, that's hindsight. Secondly, and more importantly, looking ahead, I saw the Rams, the Bengals, and the Cleveland Browns. And
you
I said, okay,
wait a minute.
Let's see what Andy Dalton does. Give him that time. Let him come in week four of the season and then move forward from there. It wasn't just Cleveland. I was saying the Rams, Bengals, Cleveland. First three games, buy him that time to get him ready for his NFL career, because once you put him in, you don't look back. Matt Nagy put him in against Cleveland and then walked around all apprehensive about whether he was going to start him against the Detroit Lions, which everybody was lamenting made no sense.
Stephen A., respectfully, I understand where you're coming from, but four out of his next 5 games against the Raiders defensive line, the Bucs defensive line, San Francisco's. So, like, again, this is the NFL. A lot of teams have good defensive lines. And I like the fact that week one against Cleveland for him starting-wise was a mess, and they changed it. I will tell you two things. This move should also coincide with Matt Nagy making the firm announcement that Bill Lazor is the offensive coordinator, that he is going to be the play caller, that he is taking control, and Matt Nagy is just going to be the head coach.
I think
this is a little bit of a prove yourself 12-week period for Matt Nagy. And if Justin Fields does not look fantastic, or at least the development of him does not look fantastic, then again, I think the Bears as an organization have to go find the right guy to steward Justin Fields' career moving forward.
Yeah. Let me just say, the schedule is really tough. The next five games, Vegas, Green Bay, Tampa, San Francisco, and then Pittsburgh's defense.
I'm looking at all of that, which is why I had no problem with saying he should come in week four. And Bill Lazor, listen, let's keep an eye on him. They were the 20th-ranked offense last year, okay? They're 30th right now. Mm-hmm. The 2 years in Cincinnati prior to that, their offense was ranked 31 and 30 in yards. Bill Lazor was that offensive coordinator. So I'm just saying, let's not act like he's a savior. He's got something to prove, too. We'll see.
Yeah.